Welcome to episode 174 of Practical Defense, Child Black Belts with Paul Wilson. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addicks. This week we have a returning guest, Paul Wilson. Our discussion on child black belts will also be broadcast on Paul's show, Karate Cafe. This is a lengthy episode for Practical Defense, so I'll just get right to it.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. Today, we have a discussion with Paul Wilson of Karate Cafe. And in fact, this is going to be another dual podcast where you can hear this episode both on Practical Defense and Karate Cafe. So, I guess, welcome, Paul.
Hey, thanks a lot, Alex. It's glad to be here.
I don't really know how to say that. Since it's going to be on both of our shows, it's like, welcome to my show, our show. Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, we've both been on each other's shows. I don't know how many times at this point. Left ear, right ear.
Exactly. But if you can do that, go right ahead.
And the cleaner edit will be mine.
Of course. Of course. Because I don't worry about, I don't worry about how good it looks, just how well it works. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Boy, is that a fundamental difference between the two shows.
Well, that and the whole, you actually put them out on a regular basis as opposed to us.
You need to change that. Well, I guess in some ways you've recorded two shows today, the other one and this one.
That's true. I'm going to be spent. That means we could probably take like 6 months off in Karate Cafe time.
Wait. Don't blame me for any of that stuff.
No. I won't. It's all us. Trust us. It's all us. It's mostly me, actually.
All right. Well, I have received several emails on the asking question. I mean, I get a lot of political questions and fortunately no religious questions, because I would be the worst person in the world for that. Although I am an ordained minister, it's still a very bad idea to ask me about any sort of spiritual guidance. But one of the things that comes up a lot is black belts and kids and what I think of that. Generally, because a lot of people read on the message boards, it's highly controversial. And my problem is I'm split. And so to help me with the conversation, I decided I'd ask another martial artist that I respected. So, no. And then I couldn't get him, so I decided to call Paul.
Bazing!
So, I mean, Paul, you don't have kids in your class. You actually only teach adults.
Pretty much. She's a 13-year-old. She's one of my actually senior students. I made the exception with her because she had actually was training already, and she was almost a green belt. Under another instructor before she came to me. So, and she's actually a little bit of an exception as well, because, she's a stereotypical, she's homeschooled, she's fairly mature, and that sort of thing. So, she's really my only kid, but, she's kind of an exception, really.
Okay. Now, my experience is actually all over the place. I have been a child student. I started when I was 10 in Ed Parker School. And under Ed Parker, back in those days, he had a hard rule that you could not earn your brown belt or your third GUP until you were 18, and then you could not earn your black belt until you were at least 21. My problem was I started when I was 10. I moved up to the adult class when I was 12 because I was just so much bigger and stronger than the other kids in the class. It wasn't fair. I fought in tournaments every weekend, and so it just wasn't a challenge. So they moved me to the adult class when I was 12. So I was doing all the adult classes 5 to 6 days a week for years. It was, come home from school, get something to eat, put on my uniform, and walk down to the studio. And then we'd do the classes, and then my parents would pick us up after work. That was what my day was, Monday through Friday, and then Saturday mornings. So I advanced up to the point of green belt, which is fourth GUP, right underneath brown belt. And I was 16. And I was stuck.
Huh.
I was absolutely stuck. And I was looking at least 2 more years before I got... Oh, by the way, also on top of that, I had private lessons twice a month with Grandmaster Larry Tatum. So I was stuck. I was absolutely stuck. I competed almost every weekend. I was working out and training 5 days a week. And I was going nowhere. That was it. And it was one of the reasons why I quit martial arts the first time. Now, I've been in and out of martial arts over the past 30 years, which is why I've got about 20 years combined experience, but they're not all consecutive. And that was a factor. And everyone was telling me at the time, don't quit, Alex. You're going to regret it. Don't quit. I quit and I came back and I regretted the time I waited. But, 16, I was starting to go to the nationals and swimming as well. And, I had a car and a girlfriend and, I wasn't going anywhere in martial arts. So I drifted away and I was gone for, 6 or 7 years before I came back and started training again. But one of the factors was I had no place to go. So I understand from the child's perspective that unless you have those continuing goals, you're going to lose interest.
Yeah, absolutely. I had class tonight and I was talking with the girl in my class, and she just recently got her brown belt. And we had our camp a couple weeks ago, and so we were at camp, and tonight I reminded her, I said, I teach a little bit differently than some people in the Federation because there are more than a few schools in our Federation that won't teach tuate, the joint locks and whatnot, to anyone younger than 16, because 16 is kind of like the magical number. Like you can't be a full black belt until you're 16. So if people get their black belt, their junior black belt, that kind of thing. And so I told her, I said, like, yeah, you notice at camp that like you were one of the, you were a brown belt. And so they put her, and she's tall. So she looks older than she actually is. And I said, like, you did tuate, right? And she's like, yeah. But and one of my green belts, who he's older, he's 19. And he was like, yeah, they had all the kids just doing, one steps or whatever. And there were some kids that were brown belts and stuff, and they had them doing that. And we were doing tuate. I said, yeah, because they didn't know you weren't that age. And she said, like, yeah, because she couldn't come to tuate camp that we have every year because she's young. Although this year, I think I'm going to slip her in. And so to me, I'm like, well, we're teaching the art. Why not teach the whole art or the whole system, But I can see as an instructor, I don't teach kids for a reason. And every time I say it, I always, in my head, it flashes back about the, we're so deadly, we can't teach kids because, they'll kill people. We're kind of a self-defense based art. And so some of the techniques we do are kind of serious, and you have to be kind of focused to do them, quote unquote, responsible with the application of these things. So I don't think that our style is really good for kids because of that. However, we do have lots of kids in the style now. But when I started, I was saying like 17 or whatever when I started, and there were no kids in any of the schools that I went to. It has changed over the years, over the 20 years, that because kids help keep the doors open. You know, if you want to be a dojo of any size, you're going to have to include that.
And in Los Angeles, kids are where you make most of the money. Because you could have 20, 30 kids, and the parents, see, the whole thing is parents will take the kids to class whether they want to go or not. So you will have a full class of kids when you might, you know, some nights, especially like when it's raining or something like that, you know, you'll have a handful of adults. But you'll always have a set of kids in the class because the parents will bring them, whether they, because there's no choice in the matter. They consider it like soccer or baseball or anything else. In fact, during soccer and baseball season, we lose a lot of our kids because they're pulled off in those other sports.
Oh, yeah. And summer, too. Summer's always a big lull. I've got two other guys. They're in college. You know, they're one's 19, the other's 21 or whatever. And they're in college. And same thing. You know, it's so it doesn't just it's not also just kids. It's pretty much anyone who's not actually in the workforce.
Exactly. Now, we see the same things. The teenagers that will move up from the kids class to the adult class, you know, as soon as they hit 18 and they go off to college, boom, we never hear from them again. Now, even if they're going to local college, they're still gone. They just drop out. I think in all the years I've done it, I think only one person has actually stayed and trained through college.
Oh.
It's challenging. But the kids, I mean, you'll have, you know, 2 to 3 times the number of kids than you do adults. And the rates are almost identical. So the kids are where the money is. Kids are where the thing, keep the doors open. Now, here's the challenge, and here's the thing, and here's, I see it a couple of different ways, unfortunately. I would love to have this cut and dry. My problem is I can't. My nephew started when he was 4. When he was old enough to start training, he started training. And my sister took him in every single class session. So he was there 4 days a week, you know, 3 nights during the week and then Saturdays. And he did that for years. He did that for 4 years. And he did the entire kids program. He's extremely gifted physically. He's a really nice kid. And when he turned 8 and he tested, he passed for his black belt. So an 8-year-old black belt?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. He put the time in. He trained. He trained hard. He learned his kata. He learned his techniques. You know, he was there working out harder than most of the adults. He earned it. But at the same time, I'm lining up in class and I'm standing next to an 8-year-old. I have socks older than him. I've been doing martial arts longer than he's been alive.
Yeah, it's, you know, well, and I agree with you. I can't cut and dry for it. Too, because I can see both ends of the problem, and kind of where I have, I think I've talked about it on our show before, where I've kind of started nuancing the argument in my mind, because like right now, I said, you know, 13 and above, that's it, 13 and above. You know, you got to be 13, takes you about 3 years to get to black belt, so that way I can avoid the whole junior black belt thing. And, you know, so 3 years, yeah, or, you know, 13 was just kind of where I took it. And now I've run into a few, you know, 10-year-olds, 10, 11, 12-year-olds that are essentially where my girl is. You know, she was, you know, 12, I guess, or... Yeah, 12 or 11 and a half or whatever when she came to me. So, you know, I can see that there are kids that have that sort of mindset and temperament and all that kind of thing like that. And then, like, you know, we went to camp, and, you know, you would see kids that are just, you know, bouncing off the walls. You see kids that are very focused. You would see, you know, kind of the gamut. But I don't want necessarily to just have anyone come and try the class out. So what I started doing was I said, okay, now 10 and over. But what I recommend is I really want a parent to join, because what I don't want is, or at least, you know, join for like 6 months, because what I don't want is the parent to come drop the kid off. They go to Barnes & Noble for an hour and come back. And, you know, I want them to,
I
you
see
know,
that all the time though. Yeah, I see that all the time when I teach the kids class.
You know, I want them to be engaged, but and my argument on what I tell them is usually I said, this way they also have someone to practice with at home. Whether that'll happen or not is entirely, you know, out to lunch. That's kind of where I'm going. It's like, okay, now, because what I tell them is, I say, you want them to try karate? Have them come in the class. You know, just have them come, have them watch a class. You see if it's something they want to do. Because if they don't even really think they want to do it, why even get on the floor? I said, if they kind of are kind of interested in it, we can try it out for a week. You know, that's my standard, you know, try it out for a week for free. And, you know, if they're kind of interested in it, okay, then we'll talk. But what I'm using that for is kind of a time to kind of look at the kid and go like, you know, is this kid really? Except for in the last year or so, I've kind of nuanced it where I go like, okay, if they're there with purely the intent and the knowledge, and I've stuck this, I was talking with somebody about this the other day, it's really the instructor's duty to inform, you know, the 8-year-old that they're handing the black belt to, you know, you are not a walking death machine. You know, there are, you know, physics is in play that, there are techniques that you know you can do that will not work, you know, and your body is not finished growing. It's, you know, there's many reasons why, from a self-defense standpoint, you know, you're ineffective.
Which brings up, well, go ahead.
Yeah, but the concepts, you know, self-defense concepts that we talk about, and sort of the large self-defense concepts, you know, kicking and screaming and being aware and all that other stuff, and the art of the karate, the do, the, you know, the self-esteem and the, you know, respect and the responsibility and the learning forms and getting them down and getting them correctly and learning all the protocols and you know the art of it, you know, not necessarily the practical part of it, but the art of it. Achieve that level in, and as long as you understand and I'm okay with it, then I think that's okay. But yeah, as a quote unquote practical martial artist, I have a hard time with, you know, 8-year-old black belts, 10-year-old black belts, you know, 12, 13-year-old black belts.
Well, get this. My nephew, by the time he was 14, was a third Dan.
Okay.
Yeah. That's... Yeah, I'll get in a little more into that later. With maturity has a lot to do with it, because we are teaching things that can be misused. Now, I used to get in fights all the time in grammar school and junior high school. After the seventh grade, I was so much bigger than anybody else, no one ever messed with me. You know, I'd have 3 or 4 guys come up to me and try and pick something, and I'd either talk them down or, you know, just, you know, stare them down and say, okay, bring it. You know, and just the confidence level was enough to get them to back off. You know, if I'm sitting there saying, okay, let's do it, you know, 3-on-1, all right, come on, let's go. It, you know, they would walk away. But, you know, that's stupid kid stuff. But my sister, my youngest, who also studied with us, she started school early and skipped a grade. She graduated high school at 15. She graduated college at 18. So she got picked on a lot. And I would say that 90% of the fights that I got into were protecting her from other kids picking on her. So it came in very, very handy when I would walk into a group of other kids picking on, teasing, bullying my little sister. I mean, I would see a punch coming and I'd literally put my hand out and catch it midair. You know, I would do stuff like that because these kids were so untrained. It's one of the statements I like to make is that, you know, the untrained have absolutely no chance against the trained when it comes to physical conflict. Somebody who's got skills will destroy anybody who's never done it before. So I used to get in fights after school all the time. So for me, it was extremely practical and useful to be able to do that. And it would really, it wouldn't be a knockdown, drag out fight. It would be literally two moves and then it would be over. Because at the end of the two moves, or even the one move, the guy would be flat on his back. He wouldn't know what hit him. You know, I'd just do a heel palm leg sweep and he'd be down, you know, instantaneously. And then all of a sudden you realize you're on the ground. You don't know what hit you. And the guy's standing over you saying, "Leave my little sister alone." You know, and he gets up and he says, and he runs away. So the problem is, I've seen my nephew use the same techniques on his sister. Uh-huh. You know, he got mad at her and she was doing something. And so he swept her. Sister saw it. He had his ass handed to him. But the maturity level of the child, even though he's a really good kid and he's mature, he's still a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and so he knew the appropriate use, could use it to defend himself, but then would also use it inappropriately. And when we teach our system, now, I think I've mentioned this before, but, you know, I've studied American Kenpo, and I've studied Hapkido, and I've studied some Wushu, and I've studied some Chinese Kenpo. I'm studying Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu now. I'm working with my grandmaster on developing and codifying a new system called American Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu. It's American, all the stand-up from American Kenpo, which is extremely powerful, but it had absolutely no ground fighting. And then we're taking Gracie Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and combining it with it. There's amazing synergy between the two systems. They really, it's shocking the fact that they were ever separate. I mean, really, one moves into the other so seamlessly. It's really beautiful.
Oh, cool.
So we start with you start standing with American Kenpo, and then you do the finish and the takedowns and the sweeps and everything else with the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So we've got this new system, American Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu. So at the same time, what we're doing is I'm helping lay the groundwork for how things will be done, how the system will be structured, how the belts will be awarded, what are the requirements, what are the belt requirements, how we handle children versus how we handle adults. And before, in pure American Kenpo, the kids learned the katas, they did sparring, they learned all the basics and all the fundamentals, but they weren't taught the majority. I would say they probably taught 5% of the actual self-defense techniques. With American Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu, it's harder because you can't teach just the grappling without the stand-up too. So we have a subset of techniques that aren't the most damaging or destructive ones that we teach to the kids. So the kids' program is separate from the adult program, separate set of techniques. One of the things that I'm implementing is in the ranking system. In the traditional American Kenpo, kids could go up to, you know, theory master level before they turn 20 if they started at 4 and carried through the entire time. And at least in our studio, we didn't separate a junior rank from adult rank. So because I have influence over the design of the system now, we're implementing junior ranks. And even across the colored belts. So a yellow belt for a child is going to even be a slightly different design than a yellow belt for the adult to separate the two. Children will still
Well, yeah, we do that too.
Okay.
I didn't know we did, as a matter of fact, until this last camp when people got junior level black belts. And I was like, what? I'd never seen that before. I mean, unless I missed it. I'd never noticed that we had done junior level ranks, but you know, and tying in with all of this, I can understand it. I can see it. You know, the need for it.
My nephew's black belt certificate is identical to mine. You know, as it under American Kenpo, it's identical. There's no difference.
Oh, and saying like he doesn't have like a white stripe through the belt or anything.
No. But that's the type of thing that we're doing for the new system, American Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu, and the children will not be able to go above junior black belt. To attain any rank above first dan, they need to move on to the adult program. Mm-hmm. And we're doing that now as well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the having a curriculum that is, you know, built from the ground up, you know, with that in mind, is, you know, probably the way to go. I know that some of our schools, what they do for their youth programs of, you know, where they're really small, is they basically just take, you know, what we normally teach, and they break it up into much smaller chunks, and they test within that. So, you know, they may do, you know, just instead of doing, you know, we have like the 25 basics, which, you know, in the adult level, you know, or regular level, whatever you want to call it, you know, for someone to go from 10th Q to 9th Q, they have to, you know the 25 basics and, you know, the first set of tuite and, you know, the first set of one steps.
Okay, and I need to interrupt real quick right here. For people that are primarily from practical defense audience, GUP and Q are the same thing. And it's a term of, it's a numbering ranking system. 10th would be white belt. And right. First Q, first GUP would be the level just below black belt.
Right. Yeah.
So it's neat to explain that because we're talking numbers and using terms that I think a lot of the practical defense audience wouldn't understand.
Oh, okay. Well, I apologize, practical defense audience. So what some of the schools have done, and I've seen that the curriculum is they break it down into even smaller chunks. And so, you know, they'll say, like, you know, you do the middle block, low block, and high block. Then, you know, then maybe like a kick and, you know, one move from a kata, and that's it. And then, you know, they drill on that for a month or two, and then they test out of that, and they move on to the next thing. So what they kind of end up doing is testing up through, to be honest, I don't know if they're just doing stripes or they're doing stripes and belts or whatever, but I guess the whole idea is they test up through that, and then they're actually at, you know, what is really the 10th Q level, and they're ready to, like, be in the class. So it's you know, like the smaller kids can have, you know, shorter classes, they don't have to focus as much, and they, you know, it's more of a cumulative effect before they actually get to the real class. And I kind of like that. I kind of think that's not a bad way to go. I mean, if you have the time to separate out your classes and all that madness.
Yeah, you need to be a large enough school and have enough instructors.
Right, to be able exactly. To
something like that. But I mean, but going up to black belt, see, that's the whole thing, it's really, I don't think anybody's ever had a problem awarding colored belts to kids. It's really the black belt.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of perception, and there's a lot of expectations. You know, in the outside world, you know, quote unquote, someone looking in goes like, "Oh, well, that kid has a black belt. They must be really, you know, awesome." But, you know, on the inside world, it might be like, "Well, they just, you know, they hit their gates of what they're supposed to do." And as an instructor, yeah, it's you know, okay, well, you know, they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, just like you're saying. You know, your nephew put in his time, did all his stuff. So then how do you go like, well, but you know what? You did all that, but I can't promote you to black belt.
And as a kid, you know, who did all that and then didn't get it, that sucks.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
But it also sucks being an adult and you've got an 8-year-old higher in line than you. Now, Grandmaster Han in Hapkido, he had an interesting way of doing it. He had all the adults line up and then the kids. So if you were a white belt adult, you lined up ahead of a black belt child.
Yeah, we do that too.
Although I will say that Grandmaster Han, the youngest black belt he ever promoted was 16. No one ever and that was actually only a couple of years before, like almost a year before he passed away. But the youngest black belt he ever promoted was 16. Ed Parker was about to change his rules too. I found out years later that after I left, that they were going to make me the first brown belt under the age of 18.
Oh.
But they were planning on doing it like 3 months after I quit. And I found out 6 years later, it was like, why didn't somebody tell me? Because we're not supposed to tell you that we're planning on promoting you. You know, we couldn't say anything. That's why I kept telling you to stick around. And I'm like, well, thanks. You know,
yeah, no one could have been a little more blatant. Like, you really ought to stick around.
Well, I was such a stupid teenager. They may have done that, and I was just oblivious. I don't know.
That's true. Yeah. That's highly unlike teenagers. But yeah, but we do the same thing. We do, you know, like at camp, you know, we have all the adults line up according to rank, and then all the kids line up according to their rank. And I think that's the way they do it in Okinawa as well. Because they're seen, I've seen video of kid like brown belts and Okinawan kids, and they're really good. Some of those kids I can't say all of them are really good, but the video of several of the ones I've seen are pretty impressive. And so that's kind of where the ball started rolling of like, well, you know, maybe if they can, you know, if they have the focus and the, if they can get the accuracy and the seriousness of the training, you know, all in one sock and perform the techniques to the best of their ability, then maybe I can start to let it slide. But I've still got to put that, you know, asterisk of like, okay, you know, but you still, you know, someone who's attacking you is going to outmash you by like, you know, 3-1. So some of these techniques will not work. Maybe even a majority of these techniques might not work. So, you know, you've got to be good. You know, you've got to put that in your mind that just because you're getting this black belt, it's not because you're, you know, for lack of a better term, a complete martial artist. It's you have completed the coursework. But, you know, maybe it's almost like it's, you know, like going for a PhD and being like, you know, ABD, you know, all but the dissertation. You've done all the stuff, but you haven't done that dissertation. Well, I think the dissertation is being able to, you know, consistently perform most of the techniques in a manner that would, you know, 90% guarantee it'll probably work, you know.
Well, let's go into that a little more in depth, because we need it's a perfect segue into the next area that I want to talk about. What does black belt mean? And I've touched upon this, you know, in previous episodes, but, you know, one of the questions happens is, does a child who wears a black belt, does that mean he can beat up an adult? That there's so much emphasis placed on the physical ability of a black belt. And I think that is something that movies and TV have done an amazing disservice to the martial arts. Mm-hmm. Martial arts is about mind, body, and spirit. You know, yeah. I've seen 72-year-old men in Hapkido pass their black belt test. Could they do all the techniques? No. Was the 72-year-old man as good as a 20-year-old man? Hell no. But he was there. He put his time in. He did the best that he could physically do, and he absolutely deserved that black belt because he had the spirit, he had the mindset. You know, he may not have been as physically able as those, as some of the other people, but that is not what a black belt is. So, you know, black belt doesn't mean he can beat somebody up. Like right now, I mean, I haven't trained, you know, I've done training, but I have not done any exercising or practicing, you know, since I really ripped my shoulder up and had that whole thing, and then with my masters, and I have not trained in the studio, in my own studio, since November or earlier. Right now, I'm as slow as a pregnant yak. I mean, a standard street thug could probably kick my ass right now because I'm just slow and out of shape. I put on a bunch of weight. I need to lose it. Does that mean I'm not a black belt anymore?
Well, no. I mean, no, that doesn't mean that. I mean, yes, you are still a black belt. I mean, because it's kind of like, to me, and I've always said that, you know, I've said, you know, to take it from a political standpoint, is, you know, like if they kick me out of the Federation tomorrow and they say, you know, you're no longer a black belt in this Federation, I still am because I still have that knowledge. I still have the concepts that are applied. It's just like, you know, if you're, you know, you go to medical school and decide not to practice medicine, you know, you're still a doctor. And, you know, you still have that storehouse of knowledge. Whether or not you're using it or not is entirely.
Yeah, they can take your license to practice, but they can't take the information out of your brain.
Right. So, with a kid, it's the same thing. It's like you can give them the information. They can have that in their brains. And But I mean, they might not be able to implement it all, but the concepts are there. And another thing that kind of brought it home to me, especially after I started teaching and all that other and all the stuff that goes with that, is that there are techniques and stuff that today that I still cannot make work. I've been doing this for, you know, over 20 years, almost 30 years. And there are techniques that I mean, I've learned 25 years ago that I still can't make work because, you know, like I've said it before on a show. We actually did a show a couple of shows ago about belts and what they're good for. And, you know, there's stuff that's called, you know, that Master Soken, my instructor, our head grandmaster's instructor, he would say it's old man karate because it was their technique. Yeah, it's techniques that you just have to work on for a long time until they work. You know, it just takes a long time to get that technique where you can apply it. You know, and the setup techniques to get to that technique may work great, but there's, you know, this one super devastating technique, but you just got to keep banging on it and practicing it and polishing it until it works. You know, like the reality-based martial arts guys, you know, may not want to deal with that, and that's fine, you know, because that's part of the art also as well. As you know, this may be the, you know, the 5-point, you know, finger heart exploding technique, but I can't make it work, and it may take me another 20 years to get it to work. But boy, when that 20 years comes up, I'll be awesome. But also, I think a lot of those techniques are techniques that are ones that an old person would need to use, because they can't use the gross motor skills, you know, really. They can't use the strength or whatever. They got to depend on leverage and
index finger leverage.
Yeah, you know.
just all you have to do is squeeze the trigger.
That's right.
That's the old man technique.
Well, you know, and there is that, you know. But no, yeah, I think that, you know, all of that, that stuff is like, you know, can you do perform the technique anymore? Well, no, because I mean, I know I've told this story on our show. I may have told it to you. Was when I was in Tennessee, I went to train at a Shinru school, and the head instructor there was like 80 something years old, and he was on dialysis, and he would come, he'd put his gi on, and he sat in a rocking chair and watch the class, and then he would just get up every now and again and to demonstrate something. And I heard him hit somebody with a shuto, with a knife hand strike, and he hit the guy, and the guy like hit the ground, you know. And so he had the power there because he knew how to strike, he knew where to strike, and that one strike was really all he had.
It was efficiency.
Yeah. And so, you know, that to me, that was kind of a lesson. Was like, okay, see, so this guy's been doing it forever, and his body will not let him do kicks and you know, punches and you know, it won't let him slog it out, definitely, you know. But if someone were to grab that old man and he did that one technique, I mean, I was maybe 3 or 4 feet away, and just the sound of that man's hand hitting this other guy's arm, it was, you know, a good solid shot, and that guy dropped because he hit a pressure point, because they were talking about some of the pressure points. And so, you know, I was like, I may not be able to do that, but, you know, this guy who's been training for 60, 70 years or whatever, however long he'd been training, can get that blow and make it work. So then the argument, you know, for that is like, okay, is this guy still a black belt? Well, of course he is. and his technique, a lot of the physical part of it has fallen away, but the concepts and, you know, at least one or two good techniques that his body will still let him do are devastating. So, you know, I think the same might apply for children, as there will be, you know, a breadth of techniques that they can't do, that they cannot apply, they can't make work. But there are concepts and techniques that they can make work that, if they apply themselves to it, can be quote unquote black belt level in those techniques. That skill set, that toolbox may be pretty small and may not be as impressive looking as an adult, but I think it still can be. And then wrapped around that would also be just the rest of the stuff in your system, all the protocol and the terminology and all that other stuff that anyone can do. I think they can approach the black belt level at that. No, I don't think they can go any really like you knew you're talking about. I don't think they can go any farther than first degree. I wouldn't feel comfortable going like, okay, well, because I mean, in my mind, and I've always heard it, and I believe it. You know, they say that, you know, first degree is you're a serious student. The way I look at it is like we learn the bulk of the techniques up to Shodan. You know, and I mean, it, like after Shodan,
can you put Shodan into terms everybody can understand?
First degree black belt. When after first degree black belt and going up, I mean, you still have kata, you still have weapons kata, and whatnot, but you don't have, you know, one steps. You don't have, you know, tute sets. You know, grappling sets. You don't have any of the stuff that you had essentially at every rank step, going up to black belt.
Yeah, absolutely, and in fact, American Kenpo is the same way. I mean, once you hit first degree black belt, there were no more self defense techniques. It was refining everything that you had already learned, teaching everything you had already learned, and then learning one new kata for your next rank.
Exactly.
And it was that way all the way up to fifth, which is master level. And then at master level, there were no more techniques, period. It was done. It's just at that point, it's political, actually. What have you done for the arts? How long have you been in there? You know, those types of things. But even with American Kenpo Jiu-Jitsu that we're doing, again, we're actually pulling that back. And the last techniques and katas that you learn stop at third. At third dan, fourth dan and above, it's teaching practice from that point forward.
Yeah, and that's you know, and that's probably the way it should be, I think. And so for a kid, a child, to be politically correct, an un-ancient American, whatever, however you want to call it, you know, they're still got like their whole life and stuff that they've got to polish everything on. So I think that it's probably not practical to get them to try and like, okay, you know, you have this stuff that you learned that you can't actually do. So how can you polish it? You can't. So how are you going to get any better at it when, you know, everything from first to, you know, to second to third is, you know, constantly refining. Well, you can't really refine what you don't have. And I guess the argument could be, they've been shown it. But, you know, then, you know, maybe through the process, their body will grow and they can finally start doing it and then they can start refining it. But how long is that gap going to be?
Yeah. And that is up to the individual. Right. I mean, I see so many kids that do their katas like it's a race. Oh, and that just drives me nuts. It's like, it's always important to finish first in your class. So if you're doing, you know, short form 3 or long form 4, you know, first one done is the one who wins. It's like, no, take your time. You know, make the strikes happen. Make, you know, use power, use control. It's a demonstration. It's a dance. It's not a speed race that where you just whip through and half strike, half block just so you can move on to the next technique quickly. I'm usually the last one to end when we do do katas in class.
Yeah, well, and that's a really good point to make is, you know, now I tell all my adults at white belt level, you know, slow down. And so, and I can explain to them, okay, you know, you do it slow and you can feel your body move and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, but if you had, say, an 8-year-old black belt, you know, to tell them really like, okay, now you have to polish your techniques, you have to work on what you're doing, you have to pay attention even more closely to your footwork, you have to, you know, get your hand just, you know, a quarter inch of a more this way, all that sort of thing, you know, I think trying to get into the average or stereotypical, you know, preteen or, you know, kid or even teenager, might be kind of hard, and especially when coupled with the fact of, like, you know, you've got nothing else to learn from first degree till second. You've got one more kata, and, you know, you're going to be sitting there at least a year before you're ready to test. So, you know, on the fact that you're really quote unquote not learning anything, you're, you know, really getting beaten up over the stuff that you thought you already learned, and, you know, can they process that?
Yeah,
I don't think everyone can.
I will say in the kids class, though, when the kids move from the kids class to the adults, to the adult class, they make that transition. We send them down to learn the techniques with the white belts. because the kids don't learn the vast majority of the self-defense techniques. They learn the self-defense techniques that are part of the katas, and that's it. They don't learn anything else because we don't want to teach them backbreaker. You know, we don't want to teach them neck snapping, head breaking, you know, knee stomping, you know, the seriously damaging techniques. And in American Kenpo, that's a huge portion of it. I mean, American Kenpo is all about debilitating your opponent as fast as possible with as much power as possible. So stripping it down to make it kid friendly is a challenge.
Yeah, I imagine. And so, but at least in that case, if someone goes from the kids class to the adults class, they do have something, you know, quote unquote tangible to train on.
Yes.
So, you know, but like with us, you know, if you got your first degree black belt, you know, the next day, you know, we got nothing, you know. I mean, you got your next kata and, you know, or weapons kata or something like that. And it's not that there's nothing to work on, and you know, but it's just there's not, you know, there's no curriculum. There's no really nothing else. So to try and get that across to someone that, you know, not only is it, you know, it's a long haul, it's even longer because, you know, there's not even that now. There's not anything additional to work on to kind of keep yourself mentally stimulated while you polish. And, you know, and in that case, like, you know, if someone, a kid is 8 and you're not going to, you know, and give them, you know, a second degree until they're 16, let's say. Well, then that's 8 years of them just sitting there doing nothing. They're gone. You're going to lose them. So, you know, there's the argument, or there's the next phase of that is like, you know, so then what do you do as an instructor to go like, okay, if you're agreeing to do that, do you promote them to second degree and third degree and fourth degree, knowing that in my impression or in my mind, it doesn't mean anything really. Because they're not progressing any farther on it, or do you just keep them there and knowing eventually they're going to drop out?
Yeah, see, with the adults, there may be no more stuff to learn on the books, but one of the things that Grandmaster Parker and Grandmaster Han used to do is have black belt classes where he would teach the cool stuff off the books. So I remember as a kid, you know, going to the adult class, and on Thursday nights, which quite hysterically is the same night that Grandmaster Han used, Thursday nights was black belt night. I mean, Grandmaster Parker would kick everyone out of the studio. He'd shut all the blinds. He'd lock the front door, and anybody who wasn't a black belt was booted from the studio. So I remember coming in, you know, doing the adult class and then changing quickly because Grandmaster Parker would walk in and boot everybody. And then you'd lock the place up tight, you know, everything super secret, and the black belts would do the mysterious black belt things. But it was all the really cool advanced stuff that wasn't necessarily part of the curriculum, but it was the stick fighting, it was the knife fighting, it was the advanced technique, it was the advanced interpretations of the katas and the techniques, you know, things that you would never be tested on and was not part of the written system, but it was interesting and cool and kept you coming back every week.
But, I mean, wouldn't a kid be able to go to that class?
No. Well, again, I mean, yeah. No one under 21.
Well, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, there was part of that. I mean, because, yeah, there's a lot of schools that do it. I mean, I don't really have enough, or I don't have any black belts, really, to have a class like that. But pretty much every school I've ever been to has always had that, where it's, you know, there's the black belt class. One of the things we used to do is we would just separate it out. We'd have, you know, we'd have class. And if we had, you know, 3 or 4 black belts there, we would say, okay, now everyone else go to the front of the class. Or after a while, we were at a gym where we actually had a couple of rooms, and we'd say, okay, we're going to go back here. You know, senior black brown belt, you've got the class. We're going to go back here and do our stuff. That's what we do. We do, you know, interpretations of the kata, or we do, you know, okay, let's take the self-defense set and, you know, go crazy with it, see where we can go, all that stuff, which, you know, again, I wouldn't feel comfortable with an 8 year with, huh. Because, yeah, you know, showing an 8 year old, you know, okay, this is the way that you would snap a neck or break an arm or whatever. And then on top of that, be the person who has to work with the 8 year old. you know, it's someone who's you're twice the size of, and it's, you know, you can't get a good workout in on top of that either.
Yeah, and again, from my perspective, being that child in the adult class, it was frustrating for me because I was more skilled, I was faster, but I wasn't as big or strong as the adults. So I would, you know, they wouldn't be able to touch me, and I would be able to land all sorts of different blows on them, but it would have zero effect. And there was one guy, I remember, wow, it was like my second or third adult class, and this, he was a white belt, which is always dangerous as all heck. So what's really funny, Mohammed, who is my grandmaster now, was teaching the class back then, and I think he was only a brown belt at the time. So he's like, okay, we got a new student. Let's put up somebody who's not, you know, has a lot of control, who's safe, you know, to help the new student out. So he called me up to spar with a new guy. There wasn't a, they called him the brick wall. There was not an ounce of fat on this guy. He was just muscle. And so I was dancing around with him, and I put a roundhouse kick and just touched him in the belly. He was so naturally athletic and naturally strong without any training. He grabbed my leg before I could pull it back and flipped me. I mean, he just took my leg and he just put my leg straight up in the air, and I did a backflip and landed smack right on my back, right in the middle of class. And of course, Larry Tatum, Master Tatum, was watching, and my mother was watching, and it's like, oh no, Alex will be fine, right before the fight, because my mom was worried. And then of course, you know, on the second kick, he flips me and I just get totaled. And he looks over at my mom and smiles. And my mom's like, you know, everyone in the audience gasped. You know, it was one of those holy crap moments. And I was, man, I was hurt. But got up and lined up with him again and went again. And he did something else and just tossed me. You know, he just tossed me. And it was classic skill and ability, but juvenile, against raw adult power. And there was not a damn thing I could do against him. And that is a problem with child black belts. They may have skill, they may have ability, but they don't have, I can't think of the word I'm looking for. Go ahead.
Well, there's a point that I make with some people that, like, even in the adult world, you know, if you're fighting somebody who is, you know, much bigger than you, like, say you weigh 150 pounds, you're going to get somebody who weighs 300 pounds. All right, they just mass more. So from training in the school to training, you know, or defending yourself on the street, I think there is room, you know, and this is a gray, a slippery slope and a gray area. So it's kind of hard to get the nuance across. But, you know, if you have, if you've taught your child black belt, you know, to, you know, kick somebody in the knee, you know, and hit them in the groin, you know, hit them in the throat, hit them, you know, when appropriate, and, you know, when the target presents itself in a defense situation, all that good stuff like that, that might still work. Because, I mean, kicking somebody in the knee with, you know, 100 pounds behind it can do a pretty good job. But that person against somebody who's, you know, they're weighing, you know, 90 pounds and they're up against somebody who weighs, you know, 180, you know, there's just physics, raw physics is involved. You know, there's, you know, mass, there's, you know, and just, and the, you know, just the physical prowess of someone who is an adult fights someone who's a kid and having a little more control of their body and all that stuff like that. Now, also, but my point is, like, but you take an adult going up against another adult, and if this adult is physically much larger than they are, doesn't necessarily have to be faster. You know, there will be techniques, like, you know, if there's somebody who's, you know, either A, conditioned, or B, just, you know, like a big fat slob, and I punch him in the stomach, it may not be anywhere near as effective as, you know, an 8-year-old kid punching, you know, or you kicking that guy, you know, because they're just, it's me hitting 1/3 of the weight behind, you know, my punch onto them. But if You know, it was a defense situation where I wasn't worried about, you know, being contained within the rules of sparring. You know, the techniques that I might choose to do in a defense situation would most likely be one that would be appropriate for someone who's much smaller to use against someone who's much bigger in any case. So if a child black belt, you know, had a good grasp of those basic self-defense physical techniques, I would feel much more, you know, confident about going like, okay, you know, you've done all the dough, you've done all the art, and you've got a pretty good grasp of the self-defense concepts enough so I can say, okay, you're a black belt in this system because you have received all this knowledge. You can't do it all. and don't think you can. But as I said earlier, and even as an adult, there's still techniques that today I can't do that I learned 20 years ago. So that's what I'm saying. So there's a little bit of a disconnect of like, you know, I can't necessarily always point the finger at kids and go like, well, they can't do all our techniques because I can't even do all our techniques, but I can do enough of them to count. And as my job as an instructor, and I would challenge any other instructor out there who's listening, or any parent of a child who's listening, to make sure that, you know, there is a, you know, I guess a core set of whatever that would be, a core set of defense techniques, physical defense techniques and defense concepts that they had, by God, better know if they're going to get a black belt in the style.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, there is a core to every art. Black belt, as you alluded to earlier, means really advanced student. It means, I mean, I remember one of the black belt tests, Grandmaster Han, you know, he had four or five people that had just, you know, beaten themselves to death in this test. And they're standing there, they're all, you know, sweating and they're breathing heavy. And he looked at them and said, "Congratulations, you just started learning." So the black belt is the beginning of your martial arts journey. It is basically proving that you have a basic mechanical understanding of the fundamentals of that particular martial art. It doesn't mean you can beat people up. It means you understand the mechanics of self-defense. People who give black belts because they, for the specific purpose that they can beat somebody up, that's not a martial artist. That's a thug. Martial arts is mind, body, and spirit. So body is only 1/3 of what it means to be a black belt.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're not, I've said it before to other people that are talking about, I've heard, you know, people talk about fighting. He's a great fighter. You know, they need to be strong fighters. They need to fight. And I'm like, well, but that's not what karate is all about. That's what, you know, like boxing is about. but martial arts in general is, you know, to defend yourself, to defend your family. You know, I know there are people both in and out of the military that will say, well, it says martial, you know, well, but that's
a poor translation is what that is.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's martial art for, you know, a lack of a better word, you know, because maybe they didn't have personal protection system. You know, they didn't have that verbiage back in the day. But, you know, to focus all on the fight. I've had experience with martial artists that, you know, have talked about fighting and, you know, how they're the roughest, toughest guy. And matter of fact, I had an episode, I actually recorded a minisode for it that will be out on Monday for anyone who is listening to this, if this comes out before my show, which entirely probably will. Anyway, in which I talked with a guy who, he was a young guy, like 18, 19 years old, and he was studying mixed martial arts because we started talking about martial arts, and he got all perked up and we started talking about it. And he started talking about it. He says, like, yeah, you know, I just like to fight. You know, I get such a charge. Like when I get punched in the face, I just get really charged up and, you know, it almost feels good. And I said, you know, and that'll change as you get older.
Oh, yeah. It certainly will.
And he looked at me kind of funny and kind of laughed. I said, like, no, I'm serious. That will change as you get older.
Oh, and it takes longer to recover every single time. At my last tournament that I fought in was 2008. I'm not going to do it again. It took me 2 weeks to recover from that.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I've had debates with other guys before that say like, yeah, you know, we go in there and we fight and, you know, get a broken nose. But and my contention was, I say it as a responsible martial artist, that's irresponsible, because if you go in to train and say you're, you know, being all tough and somebody's technique gets a little loose and like they blow out your knee. All right. Well, you've got to go to work the next day. You know, well, you're out of work because you're at the hospital getting work done. You might get laid up, so that might affect your career. It might affect, you know, the amount of money you're coming in if you're like an independent contractor, whatever's going on. But the point I made was to the person I was talking to. I said like, but here's the deal: you get hurt on Monday night, and you can't walk or you can't kick or you can't whatever. Tuesday night, you're at the movie with your families. Come out to the car, and somebody jumps you. You can't do anything. You can't do any of those cool techniques that you thought, because you can't move. You know, you can't. I mean, yeah. Granted, maybe you could do something. You know, depending on the situation, of course. But you know, you've got your family there. You've got, you know, your wife, your kid. You know, whatever. You've got all those factors to deal with, plus an injury that you could have avoided if you just trained responsibly. So, you know, and the military doesn't train that way. You know, so if you want to go like all like, well, it's a martial art, you know, the military tries to negate accidents as much as possible because they need to be ready. They need to be mission ready. So, you know, I don't know how we got on this tangent, but
no, it's a very good topic. Yeah. We were talking about recovering from injuries and hurt and things, you know, like that.
Yeah. So, you know, being you know, young and being able to do stuff and you know, get punched and woohoo and all that other stuff, as you age, that changes. So, you know,
I am the living example of what you're talking about in terms of injuries. I am still paying for a knee injury that I suffered when I was 14 in karate, and then I compounded that same knee injury when I was 24. I'm 41. I have osteoarthritis in my shoulders from high level, national level competitive swimming. I am the epitome of, I pushed myself way too hard when I was younger and when I could bounce back, and now I hurt every day.
Yeah, and that is also another very good point. You know, if you or you're an instructor or you're a parent and you have a child that gets promoted up to black belt and they can't do these techniques, there is a strong chance that they could actually end up hurting themselves or someone else trying to match up as an adult, trying to, you know, keep up or trying to apply techniques as they think they would. You know, I'm constantly telling my students that are adults, you know, slow, they're doing a technique, I'm like, slow down, you know, that will hurt somebody. You know, and they said, well, you know, I'm just trying to make it work. Like I've got a couple of students, they're brothers. I call them the rubber band men, because you can put a lock, a wrist lock, an arm lock, or whatever on them. And at camp, one of them was at camp, and they couldn't put an arm bar on him, because, I mean, they could lock out his arm. They could physically lock it out, but it wouldn't hurt. And, you know, they could do pretty much anything they wanted to. And he's like, yeah, I feel it, but it's not really doing anything. You know, at someone who's like, say, maybe, you know, a 10-year-old black belt who, you know, latches on to this guy, if he's trying to get it work, and one of the, I explained to him, I said, like, look, dude, you need to, like, let people know. Because if they're trying to do a technique on you and it's not working, quote-unquote, and they don't know it, they may try a little bit harder. And that window between where it starts hurting and where it pops may be very small, because you're already, you know, locked out. So, you know, work with whoever you're working with and let them know, okay, yeah, that technique, yeah, I'm locked out. It's just not going to hurt me. You know, I'm not going to scream. I'm not going to tap out, because it just doesn't hurt. And so as a 8 to 10 to 13-year-old black belt, you know, you may not be able to apply that technique. So you think you may not have the strength. You may not have be able to find the leverage, the height, you know, whatever. But yet you might. You just don't know it yet, or you're not really cognizant of it. And you go to apply that technique, it doesn't really work. You go a little bit harder, it doesn't really work. You go hard, and you don't know how hard you're really going, and then somebody gets hurt.
Yeah.
You know? You end up getting hurt.
Yeah, that I see that a lot with especially the newer ranks, because they want to seem like wussies. They want to be tough like everybody else. And I was like, no. Well, you have to talk to your partner. You have to explain to them what's going on. If they're not doing it properly, you need to let them know. And when they are doing it properly, tell them. So one, it reinforces that they are doing it properly. And two, you don't get hurt. So those are absolutely valid points. And it goes back, again, you know, I think we need to start closing it up. But it goes to the maturity level of the student. Now, when it comes to back to the original topic of children receiving black belts, I think that they, if they've earned it, they deserve it to a point. But I definitely believe that there should be that ethereal asterisk next to it. I don't think that a black belt given to an 8-year-old deserves the same weight and respect as a black belt given to an adult. The understanding is not there. The maturity is not there. The completeness of the art, because children are given a subset of the art, is not there. And a black belt is, again, mind, body, and spirit. Understanding the fundamentals of the techniques. Understanding the philosophy of the art and how the techniques are applied in philosophy. And the understanding and maturity that comes along with it. And one of the things I like to say is, I'm a self-defense person. I do self-defense. It's, I don't know, my hobby, my business, my life. But my lifestyle is a martial artist. Martial arts is a lifestyle. It's how you choose to conduct yourself. The physical aspect of it is only a portion of it. It's like a person who goes to the gym all the time and lift weights. You know, that is the physical part of martial arts for me. It's more about the complete package and the complete person.
Yeah, and I don't know if a kid can truly comprehend all that. I mean, you know, we've got, matter of fact, as my wife is a nanny, and one of the kids that she nannies is, you know, 14, 15, whatever, and she just got her black belt in Taekwondo. I saw today, I was at the picking up my son, because, and I was there at their house, and there's a note on the door, on the refrigerator, you know, where they're right now, and it says TKD conversation with the daughter's name. and I was like, what's that all about? And they said, oh, you know, she wants to drop out, or she thinks she wants to drop out. And I'm like, she just got her black belt. And so for me, and, you know, doubt probably for you and many of the people who are listening to our shows, you know, and as we said, you know, the black belt is just the beginning. The black belt is just the beginning. But I think for so many schools, and probably, you know, a bunch of kids, they, you know, the black belt, everyone, you know, I've even seen it in schools, like, you know, they'll have a picture of a black belt and they'll say, this is the goal. And I'm like, that's not the goal. that is not the goal. You know, it's the focus, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, you know, the focus is, you know, the black belt, you know, the mainstream liberal media has, you know, played the black belt. He's a black belt. Oh my gosh, it's the black, you know, and so they think that as soon as they get that black belt, they're all done, you know, and, you know, they're walking death machines, and there's nothing else to do, and, you know, they'll move on, and there could be, you know, and as a kid, you know, they get bored, you know, we get bored, I get bored, so that stereotype, I guess, reinforced by popular culture, and not, I think, counteracted by a school going like, no, that, you know, the black belt is not the goal. Black belt is, you know, you're a beginner, you're a serious student, you're, you know, you're ready to learn the greater things of the art. I think is a disservice. I think one of the things that every instructor needs to emphasize for kids and adults is, you know, the black belt, and I think that would probably serve to kind of take some of the stigma off having kids as black belts, is, you know, it's like, you know, the black belt is not, you know, the holy grail. It is but the beginning. So, you know, it's the jumping off point. If if maybe, perhaps, we can take some of that back and say, you know, like, okay, this kid, 8-year-old, and they got a black belt. Why? Because they finished their coursework. You know, they finished their book work. You know, now they need to take the lab. You know, and then the lab is the actual, you know, physical part, the grinding part, and stuff like that. But, you know, they've done that part. And so this is the indication that they have completed that. They've done all the theory. Now it's time to work on it and really make the practice work. And I think that maybe it's my cry to the world and the internet is, you know, stop placing so much emphasis on the black belt being the end. And I think it won't be so bad to see 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 12-year-old black belts, because they will understand, the instructors understand, the parents understand, the world in general understands that, you know, that now they're just starting. You know, they've reached the base of the mountain. Now it's time to really climb. You know, they were just the foothills.
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well.
Phew, good. I was reading from the script you gave me. Oh, wait.
Alrighty. Well, thanks for coming on your own show and then my show at the same time.
I'm everywhere. I'm nowhere. I'm the shadow.
So Paul's show is Karate Cafe, and my show, Alex Addicts, is Practical Defense. And you can find them both on iTunes. And Paul, what is your website?
www.karatecafe.com.
Okay. And Practical Defense is actually alexaddicts.com. And you can go /podcast to get to the podcast directory. All right. Thanks, Paul. It was a great conversation. I appreciate you sharing it with me.
All right. Thanks for having me on my own show and having you on your own show. And always a pleasure to talk with you, Alex.
All right. Take care, man.
Take care.
When every moment matters and a life is saved, when someone gives blood, when a hand reaches out, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Down the street, across the country, around the world, you help save the day. Every day. Your support truly matters. You can help today. Visit redcross.org.
Welcome back. Thanks again to Paul Wilson for agreeing to come on the show and take my abuse. Paul's a great guy, and he has an equally great show. I recommend everyone check out Karate Cafe. And since this was a discussion of theory, there is no summary this week. Which means that will do it for this week. You can follow my daily tips on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I am Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. For those of you with a mobile phone app for the show, from now on, I will include a PDF of the summary and show notes in the feed. You'll be able to find it in the bonus content section. And finally, if you want to help out the show, a positive review on iTunes would be greatly appreciated. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddicts.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe. Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddicts.com. That's podcast@alexaddicts.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddicts.com.